First reading is taken from the book of Isaiah, chapter 40, beginning at verse 21. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them like a tent to live in, who brings princes to naught and makes the rulers of the earth as nothing. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown, scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth. When he blows upon them and they wither, and the tempest carries them off like stubble. To whom then will you compare me, or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see. Who created these? He who brings out their host and numbers them, calling them all by name, because he is great in strength, mighty in power, not one is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God? Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. Even youths will faint and be weary, and the young will fall exhausted. But they who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.
A reading from the first epistle to the Corinthians, chapter 9. If I proclaim the gospel, this gives me no ground for boasting, for an obligation is laid on me. Woe to me if I do not proclaim the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I am entrusted with a commission. What then is my reward? Just this, that in my proclamation I may make the gospel free of charge, so as not to abuse my power in the gospel. For though I am free with respect to all, I have made myself a slave to all, so that I might win more of them. Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, so that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that I might by all means save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, so that I may share in its blessings.
Hear the gospel of Christ according to Mark, chapter 1, beginning at verse 29. As soon as they left the synagogue, they entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told him about her at once. Jesus came, took her by the hand, and lifted her up. Then the fever left her, and she began to wait upon them. That evening at sunset, they brought to Jesus all who were sick or possessed with demons, and the whole city was gathered around the door. And he cured many who were sick with various diseases, and cast out many demons. And he would not permit the demons to speak, because they knew him. In the morning, while it was still very dark, Jesus got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And Simon and his companions hunted for him. When they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is searching for you." Jesus answered, "Let us go on to the neighboring towns, so that I may proclaim the message there also, for that is what I came to do." And Jesus went throughout Galilee, proclaiming the message in their synagogues and casting out demons.
The Maori word taura means a rope, and whiri means to plait, the technical process used in rope making. He taura whiri is a plaited rope. It's also a metaphor used by orators to express the art of peoples as strands in the rope, coming together, keeping their uniqueness but combining their strengths in order that the community as a whole becomes stronger. Making ropes the traditional way, Maori twisted and rolled strands of scraped flax together to make longer strands, and then plaited as many as 16 together to make ropes, some round, some square. The strands may vary in thickness and colour, and new ones were easily spliced in. A rope thus made was many times stronger than any one of its strands. Waitangi is about history and symbol. At its worst, it is about the devastating effects of losing land to greed and racism. It's about ignoring the need for reparation and rebuilding of justice-centered relationships. It's about blaming those oppressed for their oppression. We need to know the history of our land and feel the pain of it. But we also need to know the history of our land and feel its promise and work for it. At its best, Waitangi was and continues to be about bringing the strands together without loss of mana or integrity. It is about welcoming other cultures being spliced into that rope. It challenges us to value the skills of rope making, weaving diversity without losing identity. The Waitangi vision for this country is not a melting pot of races stirred into an amorphous mix. Rather, it is about strong, independent cultures working together, sharing their strengths, and valuing the conciliatory art of talking and translating across difference. Our Anglican Pākehā connection with Waitangi goes back to Henry Williams, affectionately called Four Eyes. He who with his son, Edward, worked late into the night to translate the treaty into Te Reo Māori. Henry arrived here in this land in 1823, having fought in the Anglo-American War of 1812. That war convinced him of the futility of all wars, and he converted to being a peacemaker. In Aotearoa, Williams could see that the other missionaries were not succeeding in converting Maori to Christianity because they spent too much time trying to make Maori live like Europeans. He also told them that they should learn Maori language and culture. William's courage, especially in settling disputes, remember the musket wars were going on, his warm regard for people, and his acceptance of Maori custom earned him respect and affection. It also led to a huge increase in the number of Maori who saw merit in Christianity. Henry was a strong supporter of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, seeing the rule of British law as a protection against unscrupulous land deals and general lawlessness. After the treaty was signed, there was a lot of conflict. Settlers became suspicious of Williams because he was friendly with Maori. Williams was also overtly political. He raised the ire and hostility of the settlers, for example, when he purchased land in trust for the Maori owners in the Wellington region to prevent further alienation of Maori land. A number of accusations against Williams, one of which the acquisition of land for himself in the Bay of Islands, continues today. That land was purchased with a full and continuing agreement of the Maori sellers. It's important for us to realise the political nature of such accusations, as various church leaders, like Williams, tried to thwart the settlers' greed for land and the politicians' connivance. As you may be aware, there are a number of mistranslations between the English and Maori versions of the treaty. Some Maori thought that Williams had misled them when he told them what was in the treaty. He had not told them that the English version said they would be under the control of the British Queen's representatives. The Maori version indicated that there were two sovereign peoples in the same country, each with their mana intact. The influence of Henry Williams was significant in convincing Maori to sign the treaty. Was he therefore a puppet of European colonialism, whose agenda was often to seize as much Maori land as possible? Or was he trying to build a country based on peaceful interactions, where two races, two languages, and two cultural ways of operating existed? I think the latter. The failure of the treaty to prevent land alienation was a great disappointment to him, as were the civil wars of the 1860s that he lived long enough to see. The Christian faith is not culturally bound. Originally, it was Jewish, then Greco-Roman, and came to this country predominantly via the Anglo-Saxon and Celtic cultures. Williams understood that Christianity must be freed from its cultural packaging in order to take root in another culture, and that is not easy. The Anglican Church of Aotearoa, New Zealand and Polynesia today has three major cultural streams, as our name suggests. Faith is expressed in the language and thought forms of all three. It has great diversity, great potential for conflict, and an amazing openness to grace. What has been and continues to be important for our church, and I suggest for our nation, is people who can talk across and between cultures. It's vital that we have people who are bi or multicultural. That is, people who know more than one language and way of thinking. In a recent review, Vincent Ward, talking about his movie River Queen, says New Zealand has been formed not by Maori and Pākehā, so much as by the people in between Maori and Pākehā, trying to find a way of coexisting. His movie is about the experience of trying to fit into a community where you don't necessarily know all the rules, and in trying to learn about another culture, learning mostly about yourself. Those who can broaden their minds to understand contrary viewpoints and what gives rise to them are the peacemakers and the nation builders. Our world is badly in need of such people. We need people who have walked the path of realizing the iniquities of the past, feeling the shame of that and the communal culpability, and knowing the need for redress. We need people who see the continuing need for relationships across culture and difference, and work at those relationships in order that the riches of both are shared with each other and with the world. Rope making is an art. It involves skill, cooperation, and continuous hard work. As a nation, we are at last beginning to recognize the enrichment and strength that comes from weaving many diverse strands together. But the task of creating a unique national identity is an ongoing one. At Waitangi on February the 6th, 1840, Colenso tells us, Governor Hobson said to each rangatira who signed the treaty, "He iwi tahi tato." Presumably he was coached by someone, probably Henry Williams. Colenso translated this into English as, "We are now one people." In doing so, he overlooked three subtle points. First, the word iwi means nation as well as people. Secondly, if Hobson meant one people, he should have said, "He iwi ko tahi." Tahi without the prefix ko means together. Thirdly, the last word, tato, certainly means the first person plural, we or us. But it is a special form, one without an equivalent in English. Use of tato signals the fact that the we in question comprises two or more distinct groups. So this short sentence in Māori packs in a lot of meaning. A fuller English translation would be, "We two peoples together make a nation." Rather different from "we are one people." We two peoples together make a nation. And today we might give it a wider interpretation. We many peoples together make a nation.